Go ahead and be seated. Good morning. We apologize for the delay and a little unforeseeable. You may notice that Justice Seda and Justice Cherry aren't with us today. Justice Seda was unavoidably detained in Las Vegas. She will be listening to the podcast. She will participate in the post-argument conference via telephone. Justice Cherry is recovering from a hip surgery that we are all happy to say was very successful. He, too, will be listening to the podcast and participating in the post-conference or the post-argument conference. So I just wanted to make that aware for you. All right. Our next case this morning Humboldt County Public Defender versus District Court. This is docket number 53460. Counsel, are you ready? All right, if you'd like to come up.
Justices, my name is Matt Sturmitz. I am the Humboldt County Public Defender. I was so appointed back in July of 2007. At that time, Humboldt County and Pershing County were operating a joint public defender office. It had previously been operated by the state public defender. When I took over in July of 2007, I was mandated to reside in Winnemucca. Support staff was in Winnemucca. The central offices was in Winnemucca. I was authorized by the ordinance to hire a deputy. I did do that. At the time he was hired in September of 2007, he had 1 year remaining on his eligibility as a 49.9 conditional licensed attorney. He was assigned to the Pershing County Courthouse with some responsibilities in Winnemucca. Humboldt County and Pershing County, of course, are in the 6th Judicial District. There's a third county, Lander County. That county has a private flat fee contract public defender. Their delivery system is separate. They operated separately over the years from Pershing County and Humboldt County. Humboldt County paid 80% of the budget, the joint Humboldt County, Pershing County budget. That was based on statute, which required that the budget be pro rata based on population. Pershing County had 20% of the population. Humboldt County had 80% of the population. Ultimately, after about a year, it did not appear that it was going to work. I was having a significant interference in my ability to supervise the conditionally licensed attorney. And when a decision was made to split the offices, I agreed to that. And so in July of 2008, I remained as the Humboldt County Public Defender. Mr. Cochran, the conditionally licensed attorney that I had hired as the deputy, apparently was hired on in Pershing County to run that public defender office. There was, which is documented in the record, some exchanges between myself and the judge. I certainly believe that I was attempting to comply with initially the 49.9 Supreme Court rule, the state bar rules, as well as the ordinance. Apparently the judge saw it differently. On March 9th of 2009, the judge entered an order that said he was recusing himself from all cases that involved Matt Sturmitz, the Humboldt County Public Defender. Previous to that, and what he was amending, was a January 10th, 1994 order that set up the division of labor for the two judges in the 6th Judicial District Court. And according to that order, January 10th, 1994, Judge Sullivan and Judge Wagner were the two sitting judges. And unlike some rural counties, they agreed that they would have calendar days in all three counties and that they would simply have cases assigned to them on an alternating basis. They were not dividing up subject matter or geographic location. So on March 9th, 2009, Judge Wagner declares under Canon 2 that he's cannot sit, and under Canon 3 he cannot sit, biased towards the attorney, Humboldt County Attorney Matt Sturmitz. And so what he does is he enters an order that he's recusing himself. And so consequently, all the cases that come out of Union Township Justice Court, which is Winnemucca, will come up to the clerk's office, the 6th Judicial District Court, and they will all be lodged in Department 2, which is now Judge Michael Montero, and he will have nothing to do with any of my cases.
Mr. Sturmitz, maybe we can get to the point here on this, and we understand procedurally what happened. From your perspective, what's the dispute with you and Judge Wagner that resulted in this happening? And then we'll hear from, Mr. Newman and Mr. Shirley here.
There were letters directed to the county commissioner complaining about the way I was doing things, the way I was supervising the 49.9 lawyer, and that was the initial dispute. And ultimately, the problem is that historically, the scheduling and the staff is in Winnemucca, support staff. He's a 49.9 lawyer. I'm a supervising attorney. He's off in Lovelock, and instead of all the discovery and the documentation coming through the Winnemucca office, it's all lodging down there. And there's absolutely no way I can comply with the ordinance, which requires that staff track cases and do an annual report. There's no way I can supervise that things are being done, and I had no evidence that anything was being done. And so I had given a directive for him to come to Winnemucca, where 80% of the population, 80% of the caseload, come down here, as has been the past practice, and have an office in Winnemucca, and let me supervise you and avail yourself of our staff. That was the start of this, sent a letter to the commissioner saying, oh, no, that's all wrong. Mr. Sturmitz has given him unethical advice. It'll never work with files down in Winnemucca, where they've always been and where support staff is and where the scheduling staff is. We're not going to do it that way. And at that point, I lost any ability to supervise Mr. Cochran because he said that he was going to sever the office if I went forward with my plans to direct him down to Winnemucca. I never fired him. There was some discussion that I fired him. I never fired him. After about 2 months went by, at that point, I saw this as unworkable because I'm a supervising attorney, and now it's hands off for me. So at that point, the Humboldt County Commissioner, I was in support, agreed to sever the offices. Subsequent to that, there was a couple writs that the judge complains of where I filed writs of prohibition in the ordinary course of cases. The last one was he attempted to appoint me to represent a gentleman in a termination proceeding. The Humboldt County Ordinance limited my practice as a county employee to juvenile, criminal, and 432B actions. The county ordinance barred me from private practice. So I filed a writ of prohibition with the Supreme Court challenging his authority to appoint me to that position. And his response was, he was directed to respond, was, well, I'm not going to worry about this any further. I've appointed other counsel. This is a waste of resources. And then he went on to criticize me, and he attached to that order a letter that he'd previously sent to the county commissioners, had nothing to do with the termination proceeding, saying that I had somehow ruined drug court and I was pleading people guilty to felonies to avoid drug court. Well, I wondered what civil remedies there were to clean that up and get him to respond or get that off the record. And I filed, looked at the civil rules, and there was a motion for sanctions, and so privately I sent it to him. I probably was a little aggressive in my language, but it was sent to him to get him to agree to clean up the record that he had put into this writ that had nothing to do with the writ. That's ultimately was the last act that caused him to recuse himself.
Well, assuming for the moment, Mr. Sturmitz, that this dispute exists and without anyone taking sides about who's right or wrong in the dispute, in Goldman, we have said that the court accords substantial weight to the judge's determination that he can no longer fairly and impartially preside in cases in which you're there. So I'm trying to clarify the relief you seek. Are you, by your petition, asking us to set aside the judge's order of recusal because it is not legally or factually supported, or are you asking us to do something else? Could you please clarify the relief you're seeking?
And I take it to the next step, and I'll tell you. And I think that maybe the new judicial canons give the judge even greater discretion to that are going to come out on the 19th to disqualify himself as well. That was one of the points of relief that I initially was asking for. I understand Goldman. On March 12th, he entered an order.
I'm sorry, which relief are you seeking by this writ?
Not that. I'm not seeking. Well, I guess the first.
Are you asking us to rescind or void out the order of recusal?
Yes.
Okay. Right. On what ground?
Well, on the grounds that there just wasn't a sufficient showing of bias.
Okay.
Now, if I lose that, then fine. The next is March 12th order. And in that March 12th order, what the judge did is he said, well, forget the March 9th order. Well, excuse me, he didn't say forget the March 9th order. He said the March 9th order's been entered, but here's what I'm going to do. I don't want to burden Mr. Montero with my share of the cases. So what I want is that henceforth, any case involving Matt Sturmans that comes out of the Union Township Justice Court, which is all my cases, and comes into district court, I am going to have the clerk assign them all to Department 1. Forget Department 2 and Judge Montero. I'm going to have them all assigned to Department 1. And based on my March 9th order, I declare myself biased, and consequently Mr. Sturmitz is disqualified from every case in the 6th Judicial District Court because they're now all in my department, and I will alternately appoint conflict counsel to those. So that March 12th order basically takes back all the cases and recuses me from the entire 6th Judicial District Court.
Okay, so the first area of relief is to say that the March 9th order isn't supported factually or legally because there hasn't been bias articulated.
Yes.
And the second argument you make is that if the March 9th order is enforceable, then the March 12th order is unsupported legally.
Correct.
Okay.
And one of those would be the Freebert versus Swift, which is and its progeny from the 1800s, which is that once a judge disqualifies himself from a party, and since Canon 3E has come about, we can now disqualify, judges can disqualify themselves from an attorney. Once he's acted, then any subsequent act, and once he's disqualified himself, any subsequent order is void. And so following that logic, if the judge has decided that, or the Freebert versus Swift cases, if the judge has decided that he's biased against me and he's excused himself as of March 9th, then he shouldn't be entering any other orders, and now these cases are going to lodge as they were with Department 2 and Judge Montero.
I'd like to ask one other question on this point, which I'm going to ask the other side to address, too. At least this is an area I have an interest in. Should the court revisit the standard that it used in Hecht in addressing bias? And I'll just read this sentence from Hecht. This policy still applies, and we continue to believe that to permit a justice or judge to be disqualified on the basis of bias for or against a litigant's counsel in cases in which there is anything but an extreme showing of bias would permit manipulation of the court and significantly impede the judicial process and the administration of justice. It seems to me that under the current standard in Hecht, we've said that where there is bias against the lawyer, it doesn't result in the disqualification or recusal as to the party. In this instance, my concern is twofold. One, if the recusal order is valid against you, is it valid against your clients? And second, should we revisit the standard such that if the recusal is valid against the public defender, it should also be valid against the clients?
Well, I do start with these clients in Justice Court. They're appointed. They haven't gone out and paid for it. They are appointed, and that does make it a little bit different. But I believe, as I understand, in the Hecht case is that Las Vegas Downtown Redevelopment. He's the other party. I believe that as I understand that, that I, I'm not understanding a need to revisit that, because I think that the extreme showing of bias has to be there.
Here's the reason for the potential revisiting. As a practical matter, if you're a criminal defendant and the judge has announced bias against your lawyer, do you have some practical concerns about being represented by that lawyer?
The client himself?
Yes.
Well, I guess it could cut both ways. I think it's a weak argument for a client to assume that he lost a case because of the judge's bias against the attorney. I don't see that as ever being granted. And I guess that's my response to that. I thought that the Millen versus Delvecchio case was a case specifically on point relative to recusal lists. And as I understood the law there, that it was, again, they went back to the Hecht case and the Bayaderas and said that it's going to come about disqualification of an attorney only when there's an extreme showing of bias and there's no other practical alternative. In this case, there was a practical alternative, and that was to assign the cases to Judge Montero, and Judge Wagner could pick up his share of custody cases or civil cases to share in the workload.
So, Mr. Stern, let me ask you that, if I could, Chief. On the assignment of cases, if a case is like a preliminary hearing in Union Township, Judge Wombold hears that case, and then you're on it, does it automatically go to Judge Montero now? Or I'm confused of what's happening.
January 10th order, 1994, is it was share and share alike. They do it on odd even. Anything comes out of Union Justice Court, if you got three of them in your hand, one goes to Department 1, the next one goes to Department 2, the next one goes back to Department 1. So there's
Judge Wagner's cases in this one and two random or draw back and forth, he assigns a private counsel to represent the defendants, the indigent defendants in those cases.
In the March 9th order, anything that comes into his department, he was going to assign conflict counsel on a rotating basis other than me, Humboldt County Public Defender. However, the March 12th order changed that, and the March 12th order specifically says everything coming out of the Union Township Justice Court is now coming to Department 1. We aren't putting it in Department 2. It's coming to Department 1.
So that costs Humboldt County extra money, I assume, then to pay for these other attorneys.
Sure. And ultimately, if that order is given effect, and I tell you, we can read it and read it again and again in March 12th order. If that's given effect as it is written, I'm twiddling my thumbs. I'm taking people through the preliminary hearing, and then my clients are disappearing. I've got nothing else going on. Now, just for the record, to tell you, for some reason, I read that March 12th order over and over again. That's exactly what it says. It says he's taking all the cases. But for some reason, since that order was enacted, the clerk keeps I'm still in business in Department 2, but I'm still running, and you'll see my appeals, and we've still got jury trials going on. I am still handling everything is still being assigned odd even. I'm taking everything in Department 2.
Okay, now as far as your judicial district, your judicial district in Pershing County, Mr. Cochran's still covering Pershing County separately, and then you mentioned in Lander County and Battle Mountain that's being covered by their contract. So we're only talking about Humboldt County,
and I am budgeted for a deputy public defender to assist me, because again, Humboldt County is 80%, 60% of the whole district, 80% relative to Pershing County. I am budgeted for a deputy public defender. However, because we're still waiting for the caseload standards, and this is out there, this potential issue, I have deferred hiring that second public defender, because what is he going to do? Am I going to carry him on his shoulders and he's going to go around the courthouse with me? I don't know. We'll both twiddle our thumbs. So, I'm set to hire a second person, but we need this resolved.
So are you asking us then to just have the cases go to Judge Montero, your
yeah,
bind-overs, if you're, and then he and Judge Wagner would work out some other equalization formula in the caseload? Is that it? You're responding to the Justice Hardesty's question, but I'm trying to get to the bottom line. Is that it?
And I appreciate it. That's exactly what I perceive as the only solution from this angle. If the court concludes that he is biased and he's got the authority to do what he does, that is Judge Wagner, then we go back to the March 9th order, which is it all goes to Montero. And
okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Sturmitz.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Peter Newman. I'm representing the respondent, Judge Wagner, in this proceeding. This is a complex factual matter, obviously, more administrative, perhaps, than anything else. But the point I was trying to make in the response was that Judge Wagner, there's been nothing to show that Judge Wagner exceeded his jurisdiction here. And therefore, the petitioner's application for a writ should be denied on that grounds. As a practical matter, I don't know if the court is aware, I have a copy of it, but I just today was handed by Mr. Richard Cornell, who is the attorney for Mr. Cochran, the the public defender in Pershing County, a document which has not totally been signed by everybody, but it's been signed by Mr. Cochran as of December the 12th, I think it was, December 10th of 2009, which is basically a recommendation by the state bar that Mr. Cochran be admitted to the Nevada bar, provided that his admission is conditioned on some terms and conditions, which basically he's going to be monitored for another 2 years by a procedure whereby he submits quarterly reports to the bar and so forth. Now, I'm assuming that that's going to be, if it hasn't already been executed by the bar, that it will be, and that it will be then submitted to this court, I think, has to approve it. It seems to me that the what really needs to be done here is to get Mr. Cochran admitted into the practice of law. Judge Wagner's affidavit, which is part of our response, says that in Judge Wagner's opinion, Mr. Cochran is perfectly capable, competent, and honest lawyer, and capable of carrying out his duties. And
Mr. Newman, if I could interrupt your observation, I'd like to return to the legal question that's in front of us.
All right.
The petition says that or seeks this court's reversal of the recusal order. And that's why I was trying to clarify the relief sought by petitioner. And in Dunleavy and in other jurisprudence, we have said an allegation of bias in favor or against an attorney for a litigant generally states an insufficient ground for disqualification because it is not indicative of extrajudicial bias against a party, the criminal defendant. Here, the order recites recusal or determines recusal, but it seems to be directed at the attorney. What's the basis for recusing in all criminal cases when the bias that the judge has concluded exists is directed at the lawyer?
Well, Canon 3, which is going to soon to be on the 19th of this month, changed to Rule 2.11, requires that a judge do exactly what Judge Wagner has done. If he is honestly convinced that he is biased, and the rule provides that bias can be as to the attorney as well as to the party, then he has got a duty to recuse himself. And if he doesn't exercise that duty, it seems to me that it interferes with the public perception of justice.
That addresses the modified code, which isn't in effect yet. I'm talking about what petitioner's asking for is that we revisit the enforceability of the order of recusal of March 9th. Which has to be evaluated, I think, under existing jurisprudence before the code amendments on January 19th.
Well,
so at least our jurisprudence has said if you have bias toward the lawyer, that isn't enough for a recusal against the party. And here it would appear that the recusal order extends to all criminal defense cases filed in that district.
Well, I agree that Canon 3, as it now exists until the 19th of this month, Part E 1A, is superseded by this court's jurisprudence. But I would ask that you revisit that in light of the new Rule 2.11 and recognize that the rule, the Canon 3 rule, does have some basis for, is a rational rule. If the judge, and I mean we've shown why this judge does have a reason to be biased against Mr. Sturmitz. I mean, Mr. Sturmitz has attacked this judge personally on an ad hominem basis, called him dishonest, and has done things to him that would, I think anybody, any reasonable judge would be biased against
him. Yeah, Mr. Newman, one of those things that you're relying on for Judge Wagner is that Mr. Sturmitz requested sanctions against him on a case, Could you just tell us for the record again what the basis is for Judge Wagner to feel that he's biased against Mr. Sturmitz?
That he's been personally attacked by Mr. Sturmitz on three different occasions, and in one of those was probably a Rule 11 violation by Mr. Sturmitz, because he served the judge with a pleading attacking him, which then never was filed. He didn't even file, but the judge didn't know it had not been filed. He was served with it. So, I mean, I think we can get into, you know, who said what, and, you know, as you pointed out earlier, this is really not for that purpose. But I do think that if a judge is so biased against an attorney that he is willing to recuse himself and feels that he has a duty to recuse himself because of the perception that it will make, I think Rule Canon 3 is still something that this court should enforce. I mean, I think it has to be done on a case-by-case basis, and I think Rule 211 probably answers it now anyway. But I mean,
that's why I posed the question. Currently, it would seem that if the bias is directed at the lawyer, that there's not a basis for recusing when the bias isn't directed at the party. And so perhaps that should be revisited. I pose this question to Mr. Sturmitz, I'll ask you. Does the criminal defendant feel a bit uncomfortable knowing that the judge feels biased toward his public or her public defender?
I can't imagine any other feeling. I mean, any rational criminal defendant would be very concerned that his lawyer, that the guy who's representing him, is in extreme disfavor with the judge. You know, that would bother anybody. And that's why I think Canon 3EA says what it does. The judge has, it's ground for disqualification if the judge has a personal bias or prejudice concerning a party or a party's lawyer.
Yeah. Mr. Newman, let me ask you this. I can tell you in Clark County, we're a lot more judges, and there is a chief judge in Clark County, there's a procedure that if a judge wishes to recuse because of an attorney, that the judge has to go to the chief judge and say, and this is in camera, the reason I want to recuse is X, Y, and Z, and then the chief judge makes that ultimate decision if the recusal is permitted. Now, here in the 6th Judicial District, we only have two judges, and there is no chief judge like there is in Clark and Washoe. Do you think there should be a procedure where we have another person that the judge goes to, like maybe the other judge in the district, and said, look, here's my problem. I feel I have to recuse for these reasons. And that judge, you know, takes a look at it and sees it to see if that's appropriate to do so.
Yeah, I think that does make a lot of sense. It would cause possibly some administrative problems, but it would be a good mechanism to solve this. Mm-hmm. I think that the Judge Wagner basically did what he felt like he had to do here. And I think that really it's the fact that Mr. Cochran is now basically going to be admitted is going to take care of this problem, because he's going to be entitled to do what he's doing now. And I think the writ is mooted by that.
Is it anticipated Mr. Cochran's going to do work in Humboldt County as well as Pershing County?
No, I don't think.
So it's only Pershing County.
Pershing County.
So we still have the Humboldt County issues, though, on that. Is Mr. Yes. Sturman says that's the majority of the docket in the 6th District.
Then. That's true. But Mr. Shirley, who is here and is the district attorney in Pershing County, might address this issue because, as I understand it, the three cases that were cited by Mr. Sturman have now been all those three cases have been disposed of.
Okay. Before you turn to that point, Mr. Newman, do you read the March 12th order as broadly as Mr. Sturman's does? That is to say that all of the cases coming out of prelim, out of that township, are to be assigned to Department 1.
I don't actually read it that broadly.
And it's not being applied that way?
I don't think that it is. And I think Mr. Shirley can answer that question more better than I can. But
any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Shirley?
For the record, Jim Shirley on behalf of the Pershing County Commissioners. Just to get right into it, the question that was asked, number one, is what was the basis for the recusal? And I think it's addressed pretty clearly in the March 9th order of recusal, wherein the Judge Wagner stated, or the court stated, Mr. Sturmitz has now filed a motion for sanctions against this judge before the Supreme Court of the State of Nevada. In addition, said Matt Sturmitz has written certain letters to the Humboldt County Commissioners regarding the matters which were the subject of the petition, whereas it now appears that said public defender is accusing this judge of being both unethical and dishonest. Therefore, it is ordered that of the recusal. And it goes on to discuss under Canon 2 how a judge has to refrain from the appearance of impropriety, and under Canon 3 that they perform the judicial duties impartially and diligently. And based upon the discovery of this motion for sanctions, which, as pointed out in the pleadings, was never filed with this court. It was served on a party, but never filed with the court. And if you're serving a pleading, you should be filing it with the court. That's what the rules require.
There was no cover letter or anything saying this is not going to be filed. It's being served pursuant to Rule 11 or whatever the basis is.
Correct.
But Mr. Shirley,
that's where we heavily, and I'll get to your question, Judge Justice, in just a second. That's where we heavily get into the unclean hands doctrine is you have a party here that comes in and creates a situation which he now complains of.
My question was going to be, assuming for the moment that the order satisfies the standard we set in Goldman, which in effect defers to the judge's determination, or at least substantial weight. We have also said in evaluating Canon 3 that if that bias is directed at the lawyer, that isn't sufficient for disqualification or recusal. Should we revisit that standard in Dunleavy?
I think that's an interesting question because I read the two orders a lot differently than what Mr. Sturmitz is talking about. The March 9th order transferred all the existing cases that Judge Wagner had and contemplated the prospective cases. The subsequent order never brought back those cases that were actually transferred to Department 2. The subsequent order only modified what was going on in the future cases. With respect to if the judge feels like he has a conflict with the attorney, how does that affect the client's case? I think what Judge Wagner did in this case was appropriate because in the end, in criminal cases, while it might not have been successful, you would have had grounds for multiple writs and petitions for habeas corpus based upon a perception that there was this bias against Mr. Sturmitz. And so I think on an ongoing basis, that was probably the appropriate thing for the judge to do. Had he had a chief justice to go and sit down with and say, this is the case, the Chief Justice could have, the Chief Judge of that district could have done that. In the rules, that's just not really practical where you have just two judges in each district and maybe a rule change is in order there. But faced with the situation of his canon, it says I have to be diligent in being avoiding impropriety and being fair and honest and appropriate in my dealings with the parties. What was he to do where he has an attorney that's accusing him of unethical behavior and making allegations of dishonesty and those type of things, where he feels he can't be impartial? So I think the standard has to be looked at. I think that there are two different issues there. If the judge steps forward, and I'll just be brief about this, I think in the rules of professional conduct and in the judicial canons, what you've set up is the idea that we police ourselves, the judges police themselves when we see conflicts. And so when a judge steps forward and says, I have a conflict here, he's taking that first step of addressing his own policing on what he does. If they do that, then should they be criticized for transferring the cases where they think they can't fully and impartially hear those? I don't think so.
Do we go to the next level, though? Is it disqualifying the attorney of the defendant, or is it merely the judge stepping down, the judge saying, I should not sit on this matter?
And I think there's a crucial issue there is if the client goes out and hires an attorney, so they have privately retained counsel, I don't think the judge would be appropriate for any judge to kick that attorney off the case because of the judge.
Why should it make a difference? Because attorney is representing this individual, and the judge says, I have a bias against this attorney.
Okay.
He's the sole office at this point.
Correct.
But the bias, it's the judge's bias.
Correct. Well,
so why shouldn't the judge walk away and allow the criminal defendant to have the attorney who's now been assigned or of his choice, if so to speak?
I think Judge Wagner, through Mr. Newman, addresses that somewhat in his brief, that the judge is elected to hear those cases. The public defender is appointed to represent the client. I think we'd have a different situation here if Mr. Batty or Mr. Sisk or Mr. Lewis had objected to the removing his attorney. But there are no objections in the record saying that the client was dissatisfied with what the court did.
But if the judge finds that bias and recuses, then should the judge be permitted to enter any further orders in resolving the case calendar that might implicate the bias again? I mean, to a degree, one might argue that by entering case management orders, you are still implicating the impropriety, aren't you? Shouldn't the case management issues be resolved by the other judge?
As far as how the cases are assigned?
Sure. To avoid, once the judge has declared the recusal and said there's bias here, and we've said we defer to the judge when that determination is made, haven't we also said in our jurisprudence then that the judge is to step back and any calendaring or management issues should be deferred to the other judge?
And I think that's where we get into the issue is whether that disqualification or that conflict translates from the attorney to the client.
Yeah.
If it's just with the client, with the attorney, I don't think it permeates down to the client when that case comes up from Justice's Court. All you're doing in Justice's Court is you're holding a preliminary hearing to determine if there's probable cause. It's not a critical stage. A lot of the rights that attach at the trial level don't attach. So all the judges are doing is saying, all Judge Wagner did is said, if a case comes up that's assigned to the public defender's office and Mr. Sturmitz is on that case, I can't have Mr. Sturmitz in my courtroom, but under the statute, which seems to indicate that the preference is that the public defender can be disqualified from a case if there's appropriate basis, then the court could disqualify him and appoint an appropriate person.
In another, just a broader picture, are we giving the judge the right to fire the public defender?
That's a good
question. That's the question. I mean, that's the question that's put before us.
I think the interesting part of this, and Mr. Sturmitz brought it up in his own comments, was is that Humboldt County had authorized the hiring of another attorney. Mr. Sturmitz has chosen not to do that.
Well, that's a side issue that I really didn't want to get into, because now we're saying, should the judge be running the public defender's office? Well, it seems to be a subtle issue that we're not touching and we don't need to touch. So let's go back ourselves up a little bit and stay with the other issue.
Okay. Well, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, did he remove the public defender's office, or did he just remove an individual from the public defender's office? And effectively, because nobody was hired, he did remove the public defender's office, because there's no one else in that office that the cases could have gone to. Does he fire him from doing his duties in the justices court, the juvenile court, or the other district court, or the drug court? He was not fired from those cases. He just can't have cases in front of Judge Wagner.
So are you conceding that the effect of the judge's March 12th order is a firing of the Humboldt County Public Defender's Office in cases in district court in the 6th Judicial District?
I would say I don't concede that, because there's the option of having another attorney come in because they had it in their budget. I mean, in most public defender's offices, rural counties are going to be a little different. Elko County, I believe there are several public defenders in their office.
Well, but the effect of the order is this public defender cannot.
This person cannot come in this courtroom. But it doesn't terminate him from doing his other duties.
Any other questions? No? All right, counsel, thank you for your arguments and the briefing. It's an interesting little issue. And this court will stand in recess until 1:30.